This is the OANDA podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome back to the OANDA Market Insights podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast, and now available on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week, we review the stories that made the business and market headlines.
I can report to the British people that their hard work is paying off and the era of austerity is finally coming to an end.
The Prime Minister pledged austerity is over. This, Mr. Deputy Speaker, is a broken promise budget.
Since the nature of EU withdrawal is not known at present, the monetary policy response won't be automatic.
And today we're joined by OANDA Senior Market Analyst in London, Craig Earlham. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And joining us from Toronto, and certainly going to be reflecting on those US employment figures, it's OANDA Senior Market Analyst Alfonso Esparza. How are you doing, Alfonso?
Good. Happy to be here.
Delighted to have you on today. Wages growing at their fastest pace for 9 years last month, according to the latest figures. That's an acceleration from a rate of 2.8% before. They're now at 3.1%. And the economy also added 250,000 jobs, which was well ahead of analysts' expectations. How have markets responded to this news, Alfonso?
It's a bit more muted, I guess, than if it was any other week. I think the proximity of the U.S. midterms is limiting the strength of the dollar just right away. We've seen it was a massive number. And last month, there was a bit of underperformance. So that kind of explains that some of the jobs that were supposed to be reported last month were passed over to this report. So we've seen the unemployment rate stays the same, but wages, which is a big story. And it is a big story because it's tied to the Fed and their path of interest rate hikes. That is sort of massive for the dollar. Maybe right now the market is not ready to deal with sort of the inflation part as we head into sort of the weekend ahead of the U.S. midterms on Tuesday. But that will be sort of the evolution of the dollar.
You would have thought, Craig, that robust pay growth keeps the U.S. central bank well on course to raise interest rates next month, surely?
Yeah, I mean, I think the meeting next month is pretty much guaranteed at this stage. I think the market turmoil could have mixed it up a bit and maybe made their life a bit more difficult. And obviously, we're not going to see one next week. But I think now that markets have calmed down a little bit and we've had a week of relative inactivity compared to what we've had the last few weeks from to the downside in particular, I think this report really does just suggest that next month is pretty much a given. I think my biggest takeaway, though, from the actual report itself was the composure shown in the markets was quite surprising because, as you say, 250,000 jobs added, albeit with extenuating circumstances, unemployment still remaining at 3.7%, wage growth the highest since 2009. For the markets not to respond too heavily to that, given the anxiety that exists in the markets, given that Jay Powell only a few weeks ago was effectively the catalyst for this sell-off when he talked about more rate hikes to come, it was quite surprising that the markets took this so comfortably in their stride. I think that's really encouraging for investors who were potentially still anxious about the potential for markets to decline in the coming sessions, despite the fact that we've seen a little bit of stability. If it can take this in its stride and not respond negatively, then hopefully that's a positive sign.
And Alfonso, you mentioned the midterm elections next week. You can be sure that President Trump is going to make all those headlines, all the headlines he can, from that 250,000 job rise.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's going to be like his proof that his administration is doing a great job, and basically that they should vote more Republicans in to sort of continue the good work that they're doing so far. It's funny that Donald Trump actually kind of put the dollar in trouble as well, like pushing the trade war so high up in sort of priority. And he's the one that de-escalated things a bit this week as well with just tweeting about it.
Indeed. And we've mentioned the currency, the dollar against the pound, steady around about 130 at the moment. It's been up and down over the last 48 hours for good reasons for the United Kingdom and for not so good reasons for the United States. But they are recovering those dollar figures because of the news about the thawing relations between US and China on the trade deal, Craig.
Yeah, the news overnight was quite encouraging, but I don't know. I think I've become very cynical in recent weeks or in recent months even with regards to the timing of certain news reports which are coming out. And this, I think, is a prime example of that. We're coming into the midterms. We're less than a week away from these midterm elections. Trump has seen the figures or from the polls, which suggest that the Democrats could effectively unseat the Republicans, at least in one, either the House or the Senate. And I think he's quite concerned. Now, he's tried to attribute other events to being behind the polls being as they are, which I don't really want to go into specifically, as we've said on previous podcasts. I think these kind of grim events and relating them back to markets and things like that is always a bit more difficult. So he's tried to attribute the drop-off in the Republican support to other things. And now we're getting, the closer we get, the more I think he is getting a bit concerned. The timing of this is just perfect for him. By announcing the fact that they've had a good discussion on trade and these reports being released that he's effectively asking his officials to draw up a draft plan for a trade deal with China, he's killing two birds with one stone. The markets rallied today. So we're seeing a market rallying into these midterms, recovering some of the losses which we've seen over the past few weeks. Dow and S&P dropping 10%, for example, even a little bit more. So he's covered that aspect, but also one of his things of taking on China, it looks like he's now making progress after all his harsh rhetoric and hardline stance. It now looks like he's making progress. Like it's actually a very intelligent move.
But you do
I'm just jumping in right here. Not as optimistic. I'm with you on sort of the being pessimistic on rhetoric and what politicians say. So I mean. Pretty much the same applies to Brexit as I see with China, U.S. Right now, there are some reports as well that it might not be all rosy, and it could be sort of some. It would be Trump, but more of an election mode where what you say doesn't really sometimes have a lot to do with reality. So I think the health of the trade negotiations might be a bit of a stretch. And I mean, we'll find out pretty soon. They meet in Argentina up for the upcoming G20, and we'll see if they have if they can get something done.
Yeah, I guess I mean if these negotiations suddenly fall apart or we don't see any progress over the next few months, it doesn't really matter. The narrative just has to be this way for the next 6 or 7 days until the midterms pass, and then we can go back to normal. I think it did help the fact that Xi in China did suggest that the discussions were positive. But like I say, if it is, I think it's really worth noting. If this is a legitimate sign of progress, then brilliant. Everyone wants to see progress between the US and China. Positive trade relations between the two is beneficial for all. The timing is extremely curious for me, and given everything that's happening.
I think he's delivering on everything sort of for his base. So this NFP number gives him sort of the jobs aspect, so yeah, bring him jobs. The easing of China concerns, it was just a breath of fresh air for the markets. We were kind of struggling, so this kind of gives some oxygen. So he's delivering on sort of jobs, the market, and the caravan from South America is giving him sort of a bit of immigration anxiety that his base really reacts to. So, yeah, he's 3 for 3.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because the tone and the rhetoric of the caravan and the statements that he's been making haven't been winning him many votes. That's the feeling I'm getting over the last few days. But this is now the perfect storm because in those famous words, it's the economy, stupid. This could make all the difference, couldn't it? The combination of this China-US trade potential deal and the extra 250,000 jobs, US earnings, he may indeed get enough votes to make all the difference.
I mean, he's doubling down on all the things that sort of he's always been sort of keen on. And the reason he's keen on is because his base really reacts to it. And I mean, that's the way he reached the White House and the way he sort of expects that it could work for the rest of the Republican Party. Yes, it's polarizing and it will definitely cost them some votes. But maybe, as you guys say, the economy will actually flip that sentiment and we're like, OK, well, I don't like his immigration stand, but I really like the economy responding. So, yes, he's in a good position right now heading into the midterms.
Yeah, and that actually in itself raises 2 points. I mean, all we have to do is look at the election in Brazil, for example. We're looking at the character that has been elected, Bolsonaro, and he's effectively a known racist, known sexist, known
homophobe.
None of these qualities are someone you want in a leader, but when the economy is in dire straits, people will clearly still move to these people if they think they can sort out the economy, give them jobs, and give them better prospects. The other side of this as well is, and this is what we've talked about in the past with Trump again. We love in the media loves to portray him. And it's not just the media, it's everyone around the media, it's people everywhere love to portray him as a bit of an idiot. I mean, I think that's safe to say, particularly outside the US, love to portray him as a bit of an idiot. But one thing you can't deny with Trump is, whether it's because of who he is, or whether it's because of who he surrounds himself with, as a strategist, he's doing extremely well. Everything he does has been very well planned so that it has the maximum impact. We've talked about the tax reforms before, the timing of that in relation to starting this trade war with China and the benefits that that's given him. There's a number of these factors here where, from a purely strategic point of view, and this is another example of that, giving this news in the lead up a week before these midterm elections, from a strategic point, is very clever.
But he's quite lucky, though, isn't he? Because he has inherited a growing economy from Barack Obama. And, you know, you want your generals to be lucky. So far, so good for Donald Trump, against many economists' expectations, Alfonso.
I think there's a bit more genius to sort of his methods. I think the China tweet, for example, it's a good example right now. It happened this week. Everybody was sort of still concerned about trade relations with China, the two biggest economies duking it out. And so with a very simple tweet, which is basically his style, he put that on the back foot. It was just like, it's in the background. I mean, we're still talking. There's still a relationship. And that had a huge effect on the market. Yes, earnings were still sort of as positives. There was a lot there going on. But the sell-off had a lot of people sort of anxious about their investments. And so it could have continued really into next week. So with a simple tweet, he basically just stemmed the tide of that and just flipped it around. Again, how much he gets to see or know about the jobs reports, I think it was pretty well known that it was going to be a positive number, just because the underperformance of the 2 months ago. So this one was definitely had some momentum going. But so it was I think it was a safe bet for him to make, just like, okay, we're going to have good jobs. This might help because it's going to put people more at ease on U.S.-China. And again, the immigration, it's 3 for 3 with the caravan from South America.
And let's be honest as well, it's almost in Xi Jinping's best interest as well to suggest these talks went well and the possibility for future improved trade relations is on the cards as well, because Trump didn't use particularly harsh rhetoric against China in these statements or in any of the releases. We didn't see particularly harsh rhetoric against China. And from Xi Jinping's perspective, the economy is slowing. People's confidence in the Chinese outlook is dimming. We are seeing Chinese markets that have been far worse hit by this trade war rhetoric. The currency is under pressure. It's around that 7 handle, which is making people very nervous. The PBOC is repeatedly intervening in the market to stop the currency depreciating too much out of fear of capital outflows. So it's actually in Xi Jinping's interest as well to back what Trump is saying about these positive conversations about trade.
Let's move the conversation on now. We've just talked about the UK currency, and the pound has had a much better week amid optimism about a Brexit deal and signals from the Bank of England that more interest rate hikes could be on the way. That is, of course, subject to securing a deal with the EU. It seems like a long time ago since the start of the week, and we had a budget. It was Harold Wilson who said a week is a long time in politics. This has been a financial week is a long time in politics. What did you make of Philip Hammond's speech?
Yeah, it's been a very long week, hasn't it? I mean, I'm completely exhausted and more than ready for this weekend. Philip Hammond's speech, it was quite an interesting one. He followed the script, even the, at times, cringeworthy jokes, which we now almost associate with conservative speeches. Unfortunately, we referenced the one at the Tory Party, the selection at the Tory Party conference as well, which made me shrivel up and die a little bit.
Gordon Brown was short on jokes, wasn't he, when he was Chancellor?
And in terms of the actual budget itself, it's been well received. It's quite safe to say. The tax cuts are obviously controversial to an extent because, as always, they do tend to benefit the better off in society rather than more so than the worse off. And, of course, raising the threshold does benefit the worse off as well. But in terms of who benefits most, it always does tend to be at the higher end. There's a few bits of spending in there as well, which people have welcomed, although the numbers, when you're talking about, what, $400 million for schools, which will help them buy those little extra bits and bobs or something that Philip Hammond said, which didn't go down too well with the actual schools themselves because they need a hell of a lot more than bits and bobs. But the bulk of the money was spent on the NHS, which came as a surprise to no one because Theresa May stole that particular headline. I guess one of the more controversial things was the fixed odds betting terminals announcement, that being pushed back, which led to the resignation earlier on today or overnight from the, I think it's the sports minister, who's been lobbying very strongly for those betting the maximum bet to be reduced from £100 to £2 successfully, but this has now actually been pushed back to the to allow the firms more time to adjust. But again, that's a very controversial one because obviously it's, again, this is something that primarily affects the worst off in society and people who have very genuine gambling problems who can get themselves into extreme financial difficulty.
I've got to move on to Brexit. And there's more optimism this week in terms of a deal being reached than I can remember for some time.
Yeah, welcome to the final 2 months of negotiations, right? I think it's always been my base case that this was going to run to the end of the year, and nothing I've seen recently has suggested that's going to be any different. There was the letter, of course, from Dominic Raab, which was a few weeks old, I believe, which suggested he was optimistic that a deal could be done by the 21st of November. But, I mean, it's now the 2nd of November. Come on.
We're running
out
of time, aren't we?
Very much running out of time. But that did
that was that effect. I mean, just drawing that line in the sand put the market in another mode. It's just, oh, okay, so they're really in the final stretch.
It just shows how sensitive markets are to the prospect of optimism, and it shows as well how much upside and downside there is to be had by the deal going one way or another. We were trading at 143.75, I think it was the peak that we got to a few months back when people were getting a bit more optimistic about a Brexit deal. That's the pound against the dollar. We're now trading back at around 130 because it's drawn out, and this issue with the Northern Irish border and the backstop has really dragged things out, and the prospect of a no deal has grown. The downside is also really significant as well. So any sense that we're going to get any move, get quite a dramatic rise or drop in the pound. And that's what we saw on that date. We also had the reports from the Times which suggested that Theresa May had secured a deal that goes alongside effectively Brexit for financial services under the equivalence band for UK financial services firms to continue serving EU clients, negating the need for them to move people abroad. Now, obviously, some of them have already started moving some, so there is always going to be some loss. But if you can stem the bleeding, then I think that's going to be a very welcome move. That was denied by the EU and by the UK, but I think
sides,
that's very political because we have to remember that the EU has said from day one that we're not discussing a future relationship, a future deal, until the exit deal is signed. Now, that's all right to say in public, and that effectively goes in line with what Article 50 says. But we can't be so naive as to think that these things aren't actually happening on the sidelines. And this is a prime example of the fact that the UK is saying to them, right, I agree that we need to discuss the exit first, but we need assurances on this part of our industry. Because ultimately, financial services is huge for the UK. The idea of an agreement on a future relationship not including it is absolutely preposterous because we run a trade deficit with the EU that includes financial services. Can you imagine what the size of that deficit would be if it didn't? And the financial services industry accounts for 3.5% of UK employment. This is according to a report for the City of London conducted by PwC last year, I believe. 3.5% of UK employment, 7.2% of UK output, and 11% of UK tax receipts. That's not a small industry that you can overlook in these negotiations.
I'm surprised that that didn't take a lot of wind from the pound sales. I thought that was going to, again, if the pound is rising based on sort of Brexit rumors at this point, I thought like confirmation or denials from both sides would have taken a toll on the pound, but it didn't. So that actually tells you sort of the timing was right. The dollar was also getting soft at around the same time. So it allowed the pound to keep rising. And it's basically right now on a holding pattern at 130 and we'll probably into next week. And we'll see. Again, I think it's the optimism is a bit too early. It's still not close. I mean, we hear the figures. We hear it's 95%, it's 98%. It's going to be 99.9%. But until it's really signed and there's details on what's actually being agreed, then there's very few reasons to be like that optimistic.
Yeah, I think there's two points to make on that as well, on what you've just said. The first is the fact that this is a story that came out of absolutely nowhere and came from a very reputable source in the Times. So I think people are looking at this story and say, I know it's been denied, but there's no smoke without fire. There does seem to be some legitimacy to this. And that leads us on to the second point, which is the one I've effectively already made here, which is the EU and the UK can't be seen to be negotiating future trade terms because that goes against everything the EU said beforehand. So both are denying it, and I think they're denying it to cover up for the fact that they actually have been having these discussions on the sidelines, so it benefits both to do so.
Well, I think they only denied that the deal exists.
Yeah,
but they didn't say anything about sort of the talks, and then they say, yeah, we have plenty of talks. So I think yes, I think they're all preparing for what happens next after they solve the backstop quagmire. So I think everybody, once that's solved, then everything's smooth sailing. The problem is that that hasn't been solved.
Finally, we should reflect on the news that Angela Merkel is going to step down as the head of her party. That's the centre-right Christian Democratic Union. That will end almost two decades as leader of Germany's most powerful political party. And she's also confirmed what many had long assumed, that this is going to be her last term as German Chancellor. She says that she's willing to remain Chancellor until the end of the current parliament in 2021. But is she actually going to be able to survive that length of time, Craig? You know, the term lame duck comes to mind. Often you see a situation where somebody announces that they're going to retire or resign in a long-term sense of the word, and they just have to go earlier than planned.
Yeah, I very much doubt that she's going to be here until the end of 2021. She's always been an advocate as well of whoever leads the party should be leading the country. So the idea that she will continue in one role till the end makes me think that it's a little unlikely. It's just a line that she's peddling for now until they find some suitable leader to replace her. And I also, on the idea of whether it's the right time or not, I think it's absolutely the right time. I think, for one, she's earned a break. I mean, the last 10 years must have been a dreadful time to be leader of Germany. She's been the stabilising force in Europe throughout the Eurozone debt crisis, throughout the global financial crisis. We're still in recovery mode there, let's not forget. I think she's very much earned a break here. And for all her faults and for all the things that she's arguably done wrong, and you can look at her role in the Greece bailout, in this, you can look at her role in the refugee crisis, among other things. You can't argue with the fact that she has been dealt an absolutely appalling hand, and she's actually done. She is actually one of the primary reasons, her and her party are one of the primary reasons why the EU or why the Eurozone is still actually a thing. The flip side to that is she is the face of the refugee crisis, effectively. She was the one who advocated open borders. And while many people supported her at the time, and there's still people there who will support her now, it has led to her party suffering considerably in the polls, suffering considerably in elections, suffering considerably now in regional elections in Bavaria and Hesse. But it's also damaging the coalition as well, because the sister party, the CSU, has also suffered in these elections. The CSU had a majority in Hesse, I think, Bavaria, until these most recent elections, and lost that majority. And it's also, as well, hindering the SPD, who they're relying on for a coalition. So I think it's the correct time for her to step aside. I think she's earned the right to step aside. And I think it's in the best interest of the German government, the coalition remaining together. It's in the best interest of her party. And I think she's also got one eye on AfD there, because they may be a minor party still,
sure,
with around 10% of the vote, but they are growing rapidly. And the quicker that she can do anything she takes to stop them growing, she's going to take it. And I think this is a move towards that.
Alfonso, yeah. Do you think history will judge Angela Merkel kindly?
I think it will. And I think this is more to her credit, like this move. Like, there's really a very short list of politicians that would actually step down and take warmth from the team. And I think that's what she's doing right now. I think she sees sort of the political situation, not just in Germany, but around the world, and sort of how the rise of the far right can do so much damage. And she is, as Craig said, she is the face of the refugee crisis in Germany. And I think by stepping down, She is going to take some of that heat with her so that the other two parties can sort of survive and thrive. Because it's, I mean, they're being losing votes left and right just based on that. Like, even if the AfD didn't win, it was the Greens sort of in Hesse. So it's like, it's not something that she's doing just unilaterally, or I think this is a very well-planned strategy that she has. And it, again, more to her credit, we're starting to see like how that this is sort of the longest serving leader sort of our lifetimes probably, and how she is going to the history books will probably be on a positive note. And as Craig also mentioned, like the union itself owes a lot to her and her probably no nonsense direct talk, and it's going to be really interesting who like what happens next, because the union is it's facing itself for a lot of headwinds. We'll see like the Italian budget, things like that. This is just the tip of the iceberg and what's going to happen. The economy on the union itself, it's not growing as the central bank would like. There's a lot of obstacles in the way, and not having Angela Merkel could probably hurt in some aspects, but it's gonna help because there's some new blood needed at this point, and I think that's what she's hoping that will rise up to the challenge.
Okay, before we end, guys, can we have a brief look ahead to next week? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, we summed up most of that already, to be honest. You talk about the midterm elections. That's the standout event of next week. We've also got the three central bank decisions next week, the most notable being the Fed, but it's more the outlook here that we're looking at rather than the prospect of a rate hike. We've got RBA and RBNZ as well, which will be of interest at the start and towards the end of the week, and then a scattering of data throughout things like UK GDP. But more importantly, again, it's all these political stories. They're not going away anywhere anytime soon. US-China trade, Brexit, Italy, the list goes on. It's all the same. It carries on going.
Alfonso?
The same. Focusing on US elections, the midterms, and the FOMC. Just, again, confirmations of what we've already seen. I don't think the midterm election results are going to have that much of an impact in the short term. I think the market is sort of expecting some volatility there in terms of who is actually leading the House or the Senate. So it is that uncertainty. But once that's known, it really won't have that much of a direct impact. So the FOMC, again, just a continuation of what the Fed has been saying all along. And they have the numbers to back it up, as we've seen from the NFP report. So it's all sort of a strong from that side. And yes, it's all geopolitics. It's all political risk events happening and just reports and comments from the ongoing stories.
Okay, Alfonso Esparza in Toronto and Craig Earlham in London. Thanks for joining us today.
Cheers.
Welcome.
You've been listening to the OANDA Market Insights podcast. Have a very good weekend. Speak to you again next week.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.